himself had spoken in many minutes. Morgenthau could feel sweat beating on her brow. "I'm just happy that the names have been settled on," she said. "You did a master job, a brilliant job." He allowed a wintry smile to curve his lips. "Just as long as the actual votes have been totally erased." "Totally," she swore. "And no one outside our inner circle knows about how the names were chosen." "No one." "Not even Holly? She's very bright, you know." Morgenthau agreed with a nod. "She asked why the vote should be erased. Once I told her that it was your decision, though, she put up no resistance." Eberle nodded. "I'll probably have to take her to bed sooner or later. That will ensure her loyalty." Morgenthau gaped at him, shocked. "She's quite loyal enough now. There's no need..." He cut her short. "The next steps we take will be more and more distasteful to her. I'll have to keep her bound to me personally. Otherwise, she might balk or even rebel against us."
"But betting her, that's sinful."
"It's in a good cause. We must all be prepared to make sacrifices." She caught his sarcastic tone. "Well, at least she's rather attractive." "A bit dark for my liking," Eberle said, almost as casually as if he were discussing his preferences in clothing or food. "I favor blondes with fuller figures." Morgenthau felt her cheeks reddening. "And yet, is he toying with me?" she wondered. "Testing me?" She had no desire to pursue this line of discussion. She had no fantasies about her own attractions or her own preferences. "You didn't ask me out on this walk to discuss your plans for romance, did you?"
"No,"
he answered quite seriously. "Hardly that."
"Then what?"
Without changing his leisurely pace, Eberle looked up at the light poles and the miniature cameras atop them, then out to the green and flowering parkland spreading about them.
"Offices can be bugged too easily. There are always prying eyes and ears to worry about."
She understood. "Out here, it simply looks as if we're taking in some exercise together."
"Precisely," he nodded.
Morgenthau considered that the fact the two of them were walking together might start some tongues wagging, although hardly anyone would suspect her of having a romantic interest in Eberle, or of being of any physical attraction to him. Or any man, for that matter. They all see me as a short, dumpy, overweight loser, Morgenthau knew. I'm no threat to any of them.
How little they know.
"Sooner or later, we're going to have to confront Wilmot," Eberle said, his eyes still scanning for eavesdroppers. "Viborg is constantly nagging me about removing Berkowitz and installing himself as the chief of communications. I've decided that the way to get to Berkowitz is through Wilmot."
"Through Wilmot?"
"Berkowitz is an innocuous former network executive. He doesn't appear to have any obvious vices. He runs the communications department so loosely that Viborg is actually in charge of virtually the entire operation."
"But Sammy wants the title as well as the responsibility," Morgenthau said.
"I know him. He wants the respect and the power."
"Yes, and he's impatient. If what he did to that old man Romero is ever discovered..."
"It won't reflect on you," she assured him. "It can't."
"Perhaps, but still, Berkowitz should be removed."
"And to do that, you want to go through Wilmot?" Morgenthau asked.
"That's not the only reason, of course," Eberle went on. "Wilmot believes he is in charge of the habitat. The day will come when I'll have to disabuse him of that notion."
"We can't have a godless secularist ruling these people," Morgenthau said fervently.
"I'll need some ammunition, something to hold over Wilmot."
"A carrot or a stick?" Morgenthau asked.
"Either. Both, if possible."
"We'll need someone to review all of his personal files and phone conversations." Eberle nodded.
"This must be kept totally secret. I don't want even Vyborg to know that we're going through Wilmot's files.
Then who should do the work?
You, said Eberle, so clearly and precisely that there was no room to argue. Morgenthau's heart sank. She saw long, dreary nights of snooping into the professor's phone conversations and entertainment vids. She lapsed into silence, thinking hard as they walked slowly along the path.
Well, Eberle prodded, it might be very boring. He's nothing more than an elderly academic. I doubt there's much there to use.
Eberle did not hesitate a microsecond.
Then we'll have to manufacture something.
I prefer to find a weakness that he actually has, though. Drumming up false accusations can be tricky.
Let me talk to Vyborg about it.
No, Eberle snapped. Keep this between the two of us. No one else. Not yet, at least.
Yes, she agreed reluctantly. I understand. All the time during the long walk back to their offices in Athens, Morgenthau thought about Eberle's commitment to their cause. He's seeking nothing more than his own personal aggrandizement, she thought. But he has the charisma to be the leader of these 10,000 people. I'll have to put up with him. Wilmot, she told herself, is an out-and-out secularist, an atheist or an agnostic at best. Find something that will hang him. I've got to find something that will hang him.
Saturn arrival minus 287 days. I haven't slept with him, if that's what's worrying you, said Chris Cardenas. Holly looked into her cornflower blue eyes and decided that Chris was telling the truth. She was spending an awful lot of time with Manny Gaeta, but it was strictly business, she insisted. On the other hand, Manny hadn't asked Holly out or dropped into her office or even phoned her since the night he had walked Chris home. And Malcolm was as cool and distant as ever. All business, nothing but business. Some love life, Holly thought. It's all in tatters. I'm telling you the truth, Holly, Cardenas insisted, misinterpreting Holly's silence. I know, Chris, she said, feeling more confused than unhappy. Point of fact, I wouldn't blame you if you did. He's a dynamo. The two women were having a late lunch in the nearly empty cafeteria, well after almost everyone had cleared out of the place. Cardenas leaned closer to Holly and confided, "He hasn't come on to me at all. If you weren't interested in him, I'd be kind of disappointed. I mean, I'm a lot older than he is in calendar years, but I'm not repulsive, am I?" Holly giggled. "Chris, if you're interested, go right ahead. I've got no claims on him." "Yes, you do." "No, not really. In fact, I think I'm better off with him off my scanner screen." Cardenas raised a disbelieving eyebrow. "Really?" Holly said, wondering inwardly if she were doing the right thing. "His only interest in me was purely physical." "A lot of relationships have started that way." "Well, this one's over." "It isn't really a relationship anyway. Never was." Holly was surprised that it didn't hurt to admit that. "Not much, anyway." Cardenas shrugged. "It's a moot point. He's nothing but business with me." "Probably in awe of you." Cardenas laughed. "I'll bet." "Sure." "Never mind," she said, waving one hand as if brushing away an annoying insect. "You've said you've got a possible lab assistant for me?" "Maybe," Holly said. "I haven't raised the idea with him yet, but he's got some of the qualifications you're looking for. An engineering degree." "What kind of engineering?" "Electromechanical. How recent?" Holly pulled her handheld out of her tunic pocket. Raul Tavalera's three-dimensional image appeared in the air above their table, together with the facts and figures of his dossier. Cardenas scanned through the data. "Whose department is he working in?" "Maintenance," Holly replied. "But he's just putting in time there. He doesn't officially belong to any department. He's the astronaut that Manny fished out." "Oh." She went through the dossier again, more slowly this time. "Then he'll only be with us until Manny packs up and leaves." "I guess. But he's available now, and you said you needed help right away." "Beggars can't be choosy," Cardenas agreed. I'll have to talk to him. Has he agreed to work